We're discussing Damodar Lila during this month of Damodar. Damodar Lila comes in Canto 10, Chapter 9, and up to verse 21, the spotlight's on Mother Yasoda. Of course, Krishna, but the spotlight goes to the unique love that Yasoda has for Krishna. And we're up to chapter, text 19, where Krishna submits to Mother Yasoda's trying to bind him. We heard so far the Krishna wanted to be fed by Mother Yasoda. She was churning the butter on Diwali Day. On Diwali Day. And she did that because she was getting these complaints from chapter 8. The elder gopis, her friends, her peers, were saying that Krishna was stealing butter from their storerooms. And she thought, it must be that they don't know how to make butter, so I'll make it myself. So we heard, it's a nice description. Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows, 9 lakhs of cows. And she knew them by name, and she knew the 7 or 8 cows that gave the best milk, and she knew which grasses to feed to which cows to give the best flavor of milk. So the day before she fed them the milk, that evening she milked the cows, she has the milk ready to go. In the morning, some milk on the stove to make some milk sweets, some milk that had been made into yogurt, and she's churning the yogurt, singing songs of Krishna while he's asleep in the night room. Krishna wakes up, Krishna comes, reaches out, holds the churning rod, without saying anything, that means stop and feed me. So she knows, she smiles. She begins feeding him. And she sees over in the distance, the milk on the stove is starting to boil over. So she uses some reasonable faculty. Faculty of reason says, save the milk, because it's very special milk, and it's for Krishna. And then I'll come back and feed Krishna. But when she came back, she didn't see Krishna. She saw the broken pot, little stone next to it. And Krishna was missing. So deductively, she concluded it must have been Krishna that broke the pot. So she went quietly, tiptoeing, to find Krishna. She found Krishna. And he was sitting on top of an upside-down wooden mortar for grinding spices, eating butter and feeding the monkeys. So she snuck up behind him to grab him. Krishna saw her coming. Krishna ran. She ran after him. And he's the Supreme Lord. Who can catch the Supreme Lord? But Mother Yasoda caught him from behind because Krishna allowed it. She began scolding him. The pastime, the very beginning of the chapter, was Krishna wanted that particular kind of affection from his mother, the affection of being scolded. And he was getting it, and he started crying. He confessed, I've done something wrong. And but he was crying, so she threw away this little lati, little skinny stick, and decided to bind him. She tried to bind him. It was 2 fingers too short, more ropes, 2 fingers too short. Other peers, they heard this going on. They came, they had ropes, they gave her the rope. 150 feet of rope wouldn't go around his little waist. They started laughing at her. And she was determined, I can't let him steal. I have to check this behavior. So she continued, perspiration, hairs falling, flowers falling from her hair. The comb in her hair fell from her hair. Krishna saw, Krishna submitted. And so that's the verse where we are. I'll go through the Sanskrit. It's we covered this already, so this is a just review. Here's like six terms in the verse, text 19. Sam darshita means extremely controlled. And he was extremely controlled by Harina, the devotees of Hari, that's Mother Jasoda. And Britya Vashyata means that the means of controlling Krishna was not Harina, not the devotee, but the love of the devotee. So say it again. Krishna isn't controlled exactly by the devotee, Mother Jasoda, but by the love of Mother Jasoda. It's an important distinction. Because before she was trying to bind him and it wasn't working, but her devotion grew and grew and intensified and intensified, like we may try to do something and it's not working out and it's not working out. And so, but not through false ego, but out of love. The love of a mother for the pure love of a pure mother for the Supreme Soul. Her love increased and increased and increased, and he submitted. Britya Vashita. And although he's fully independent, Sva Vashenapi. Sva Vashena Api means although he's the supreme independent person controlling the universe, and he controls the controllers of the universe, he's the Supreme Lord Krishnena. He submitted to Mother Jasoda. So that's the mystery. That's one of the mysteries. Here's the translation. In this way, the attractive Lord has shown that he is under the control of the devotee, even though, as Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, he controls the universe and all the devatas, the controllers of the universe. That's the translation of text 19. Now, the topic that we're going to begin with, it's actually ending the section for chapter 19, speaks about Raga Nuga Bhakti. Are you familiar with that term, Raga Nuga Bhakti? There's practice, or those who follow the rules and regulations of bhakti, the beginning stages. The rules and regulations are vidhis, and it's called Vaidhi Bhakti, the following regulations. You know, like you have your children, you know, get up in the morning and brush your teeth. And there's some regulations that civilized human beings follow. And in bhakti, there's some regulations or vidhis. And those who follow them for the purpose of maturing and advancing on a spiritual path, it's called Vaidhi Bhakti. And as Vaidhi Bhakti results in purification, cleansing, and the awakening of the spiritual desire to be in service to the Supreme Lord, it may come to the stage of raga. Raga means attraction. In the beginning, there may not be attraction. It may just be you brush your teeth because mom said brush your teeth, so I brush my teeth. And then after a while, you understand, you know, it's really, I don't feel good if I don't brush my teeth. It becomes more natural. So this raga means an attraction that's natural or spontaneous. And those who follow those perfected spontaneous souls, they're called anugas. Anuga means to follow. So raga anuga. It's a stage of bhakti that's a more mature stage, raga anuga bhakti. And raga anuga bhakti teaches this is now, I'm giving a little simple lesson in Rupa Goswami's teachings. He says, the fully perfected souls, not just those that are kind of like a little more advanced, but the perfected souls, like Mother Yashoda, or like the cowherd boyfriends, or Nanda Maharaj, or the gopis, those are ragatmika, perfected souls. So Raganuga Bhakti teaches, follow those perfected persons. And the focus here is Mother Yashoda. She's one of those. She's a perfected person. Her love is spotless. Okay, so now this is an explanation about Raganuga Bhakti. Even today, this is the person writing is Jiva Goswami, one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Okay, good. Even today, those dedicated to Raganuga worship engage in worshiping him with qualities as the son of Nanda. Nanda, Nandana. The Lord says to the cowherds who were amazed when he lifted Govardhan Hill, he's saying this to the elders. Vishnu Purana is quoted, if you have affection for me and think me worthy of praise, I just lifted Govardhan Hill, then please think of me as your kinsman, not as the Lord. I'm not a devata, a gandharva, a yaksha, or Dhanava, I'm your friend. You should not think me otherwise. So majesty is diminished and intimacy is increased. That's Raganuga. Both moods, the bhava mood of friendship and intimacy, and the reverential mood towards the Lord are present in Vasudeva and Devaki. So they have an intimacy. He's our son. But they also know that he's God. And their prayers indicate both. Both moods. It is stated that in their previous lives, Vasudeva and Devaki, they prominently performed austerities. I mean, Krishna says that to them. In your previous lifetime, as Sutapan Krishna, you underwent long austerities to have a son like me. So I appeared before you in the same form and said, you pleased me very much. Not only I'll appear as your son, but in three lifetimes I'll appear as your son. He speaks like this in the prison house of Kamsa. Quote, this is now Krishna speaking to them both. Both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me with eternal prema as your son. And maybe you once thought of me as Brahman. You will achieve my abode, which you already possess. So in this section of chapter 8, Chapter 8 is the previous chapter where Krishna wanted to be scolded. So he stole. Instead of scolding him, Mother just embraced him. So he did something that she would scold him. He ate dirt. And when she went to see if the dirt, she saw that the dirt, she saw the universe. So Prakshit did not praise Yashoda for seeing the universe in Krishna's mouth because it wasn't. But revered the Lord's mercy by which she felt affection for him as a son. He praises Yashoda's and Nanda's good fortune, which was not available to Vasudeva and Devaki, for seeing Krishna as their son, which inspired Krishna to perform his childhood pastimes. So here's a secret to bhakti. He reciprocates with one's regard for him. It's from Bhagavad Gita. The verse is, Yeyatamam prapadyante, tangstataiva bhajamyaham. bhajami aham, as they bhajami, as they worship me or have regard for me, I reciprocate. So those who see him as the Supreme Lord, that's how he appears. He appeared in the prison house of Kamsa before Vasudeva and Devaki in his forearm form, and he said, I appeared in this form I appeared in this form, this four-armed Vasudeva form, so that, specifically, so that you would not think of me as your son. I've appeared in this form so you know I have fulfilled my promise to you. You wanted me as your son, here I am. And then he assumed a baby form. But first is the Vasudeva four-arm form. So he reciprocates according to their love, and Mother Yashoda, they never offered prayers to Krishna. He never showed that form to them because she had such parental affection that didn't even, it was so strong, it just eclipsed or superseded any idea of Krishna's divinity. Even when she saw the universe within his mouth, I mean, she's sitting in his lap, she's looking at his mouth, and she sees the universe in his mouth. That's inconceivable, because the universe is all around her, and she's seeing the universe in his mouth at the same time. But she didn't get lost in the whole display of his opulence. She just stayed with her affection as a mother. And that's what Maharaj Parikshit is amazed at. Her love is so strong. He says, this is Maharaj Parikshit speaking to Shukadeva Goswami, chapter 8, towards the end of the chapter. He says, oh, what pious acts did Nanda perform to cause such affection? And what pious acts did most fortunate Yashoda perform so that the Lord drank from her breast? Great devotees sing of the activities of Krishna in his childhood, which Vasudeva and Devaki could not experience, and which even today destroy the sins of all people. And then again in this chapter, the very verse that we're discussing in today's topic, in this way, the attractive Lord has shown that he is under the control of the devotees, even though, as Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, he controls the universe and all the devatas, which means those who are in Vrindavan, they're more powerful than the demigods. And for that matter, they're more powerful than the controller of the demigods. They're exerting the power of bhakti, is very powerful. Unmixed devotion that's filled with love is very, very powerful. It's so powerful it controls the source of all power. That's the point Shukadeva is making in this verse. In the same way, Narada teaches sadhakas. Narada teaches sadhakas how to act using Vasudeva and Devaki as examples. So this quote is from Narada's visiting Dwarka. It's just prior to Krishna's departure from the world. His pastimes are about to conclude. Narada visits Dwarka, and he's having a discussion with Vasudeva and Devaki. And he says, you and your wife Devaki, having manifested love for Krishna and accepted him as your son, have purified yourselves by seeing him, embracing him, speaking with him, resting with him, sitting together with him, and taking your meals with him, Narada says. And in the commentary, Sridhar Swami writes, by pampering their son, they accomplished everything in Bhagavad Dharma. Same chapter, again it's Narada. Do not think that the Supreme Lord, the soul of all beings, who conceals his powers, appears only as your son. Having human form in his swarup, he hides his powers, but remains with undiminished powers. The lesson that's being expressed here, we discussed it yesterday evening and yesterday morning. The message is, when this raga, or the intimacy of loving exchange, is expressed and felt by the devotee, it's not that Krishna becomes less powerful. We had this discussion yesterday evening. In this world, we deal with people that are bullies. Or if you show signs of devotion, they may take it as a sign of weakness and try to take advantage. Materialistic people. So that's a concern for some people, that in their office or career or something or other in the world, or kids in school or something, you show a devotional dimension and they may think it's weakness and try to, you know, mess around and take advantage of you because you're weak. Some people have that concern. So we discussed that last night. And similarly, if Krishna shows devotion, then he's not God. So they think him as an ordinary person, not as a supreme person. Krishna's uniqueness is, even when he shows that intimacy of love in his childhood pastimes, his potency isn't diminished. It's exhibited in other ways at other times, but in the dealings with his devotees, he's all-powerful. I mean, here's two examples in Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. One is the Kaliya serpent. Do you two know the story of Kaliya serpent? Krishna dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent? So, before he was dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent, he jumped into the lake and was caught up in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. So the cowherd boys were seeing Krishna. Krishna's in danger, not we're in danger, Krishna, please help. Krishna's in danger. They were in great distress. One of the cowherd boys ran all the way to Nandagram. And Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, and the whole shebang, everybody came to try to, you know, do what they could do. Krishna, for a long time, he's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. He was having fun. When Balaram was standing by the side of the lake, he was laughing. Krishna's enjoying. And they were, no! So Krishna released himself from Kaliya's coils. He may play like he's not one of us, or he is one of us, but he's not one of us. And at any time, he can manifest his power. At any time. There's no limit. Another nice example of Krishna doing this was in Vrindavan on the occasion of Shivaratri. Shivaratri. It's the day that we worship Lord Shiva. So they went to go worship Lord Shiva. There was a Shiva temple not far. It went some distance. Was the three-day outing. And so the whole cowherd village went. And the festival went on during the day. At night they were resting just on the ground. And while Nanda was asleep, a giant python came and started swallowing him. And what did Nanda Maharaj do? He called out for Krishna, his son, because he remembered that at the name-giving ceremony, Gargamuni said, your son will have powers like Narayan. And with those powers, he'll protect the Brijvasi. So he wanted protection, so he called Krishna. Krishna came with his left foot. He just touched his left foot on the hood, that the body of the serpent. And immediately the living entity within was released from the curse that he had. Avidyadhara and effulgent form came from that serpent's body and started offering prayers to Krishna. So he's like a child, but his powers are there. That's the point. Whether he's exhibiting divinity or not, his powers are not diminished in any way if he's performing activities like a small child. Next. So this is Narada speaking to Vasudeva and Devaki in Dwarka. Do not think that the Supreme Lord, the soul of all beings, who conceals his power, appears only as your son. Having human form as his swarup, he hides his powers, but remains with undiminished powers. Commentary says, though this statement seems to discourage thinking of Krishna as a son, our commentator Sridhara Swami says, if affection for sons were a cause for liberation, then everyone would be liberated. Well, those that have daughters don't have sons. Some have sons and daughters. So affection for your son doesn't mean you're liberated. That's why Narada speaks this verse. Krishna's affection for Krishna, attachment for Krishna is special. Though Krishna is a son and is controlled by people who think of him as their son, he also has all powers as his nature. Thus, without considering knowledge or lack of knowledge of the Lord's powers, performance of pure raga is best. Pure raga is attachment. Pure raga. Whether you're conscious of his powers or not conscious of his powers, be attached to Krishna. Here's Krishna speaking to Uddhava, Canto 11. Those who may or may not know the extent of my powers, my forms, and my nature, but who worship me with great possessiveness, I consider to be the best of devotees. No, that possessiveness, we've been discussing this quite a bit. Possessiveness is not a material idea. I mean, there is a material possessiveness, and there's a spiritual possessiveness. And the spiritual possessiveness is one of submission, I am yours, and you are mine, that is to say, of those things that I consider to be mine, there's nothing. Near mama, nothing is mine except one thing, my relationship with you. To me, that's my everything, and I am yours, and you are mine. That's the, so to those who have that strong feeling are the best amongst my devotees. Krishna's saying to Uddhava. And the residents of Vrindavan have that to the maximum degree. Because of the purity of these elevated ragatmika bhaktas in Gokula, those are the perfected associates of Krishna, the bhakti of following them is the chief type of raganuga. It is established that raganuga is the greatest form of worship of Krishna since it displays Krishna's full nature and has great potency which can be displayed, cannot be displayed anywhere else. meaning. So back to this point that Krishna reciprocates how we have regard for him. Vasudeva Devaki, they saw him combination Lord and our son. Yashoda, Nanda, and all the rest of Vrindavan don't see him as Lord. They just see him as their friend, their beloved, a dear child in parental affection. Even besides Yashoda and Nanda, their peers, the cowherd men, cowherd ladies, they saw Krishna as with that same kind of parental affection. And that's the fullness. That fullness means he has all his potencies, plus he has this intimacy. And that's the most complete. Supposing he just shows his powers, but that isn't the same intimacy. Prabhupada gives this example. It's really easy to understand. When a judge walks into the courtroom, the court attendant says, "Everyone rise." Is it like that in India also? And if you don't, you're in jail. I mean, you show respect for your honor. They don't call him by name. Now, there is a formal, you know, judge so-and-so, you say the judge's last name. But in the courtroom, it's your honor. There's formality like anything. But then when he goes home, it's dad. Or, you know, honey or something. You know, there's an intimacy that's the full picture of the person that the persons in the courtroom don't see because there's no familiarity in the courtroom. It's all formality. There's majesty. In Krishna's pastimes, there's majesty. And it's not full. And when he's showing his pastimes in Vrindavan, it's full. So the spontaneous stage involves Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan because of the intimacy connected with his pastimes there. So here's another nice verse. Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, the entire universe with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotees. That was exhibited by Krishna this past time. That's what this text 19 says. And we're back to Raghunuga Bhakti discussion. Because of the purity, we read that sentence, the greatness of worshipping Krishna is now going to be shown. Here's a famous verse from Canto 1, Chapter 2. I'll say it. I mean, there's two of them. Text 5, Text 6. Munaya sado prishtoham bhavadbir lokamangalam yatkrita krishna samprashno yenatma suprasidati. O sages, you have asked good questions about what is beneficial for the world, because you have asked questions all about Krishna, by which the intelligent is immediately satisfied. And by that kind of question, one is the cause of satisfaction. The next verse. Navai pungtang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhoksaje ahaitaki apratiyata yayatma suprasidati. Very famous verse. Very famous verse. Translation. The supreme dharma for all human beings, which is sarada bhakti, is that by which bhakti to the Lord arises. Sadhana we discussed, or vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Practice following vidhis. It's the supreme dharma because spontaneous dharma arises, which is not caused by anything other than itself, cannot be obstructed, and which satisfies the mind completely. Supersedati. One starts with offering karmas. with great effort. And finally, achieve steadiness in bhakti. From the worship comes satisfaction. But questions about Krishna immediately satisfy the mind or intellect. So now comes that little section. I don't think I'm going to go too much longer because of the circumstance. Next comes, what about other than Krishna? Is it the same? Because we just, in the morning session, we were discussing Ram's Leela, Diwali. And, there, of course, this is the Damodara Leela also happens on Diwali. So what about other forms other than Krishna? Is that same experience there on the part of the worshipper? Here's what it says in the Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8. Topics of the Lord, who has astonishing powers, in other avatar forms, are all auspicious for the world. O great soul, please speak so that I can give up the body absorbing my mind, devoid of material desires, in Krishna, who is the source of all avatars. This is Marsh Prakshit is cursed to die. Shukadev Goswami has come to narrate Srimad Bhagavatam, and he's hearing and he's going, I'm ready. I want to be more ready. Please continue speaking topics of Krishna because it will free me from all material desires, and I know that Krishna is the source of all avatars. Krishna means the friend of Arjuna, not Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. That's the end of that little section. We just finished chapter 9, text, canto 9, excuse me, chapter 9, text 19. We'll just read the verse in purport for text 20 and end. Text 20 just follows from what we just covered. Neither Brahma nor Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of God, a deliverer from the material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. So this is comparison. These are most exalted persons, Brahma, Shiva, and even the goddess of fortune herself, have not been recipients of mercy like Mother Yashoda has been recipient of Krishna's mercy. That's what's being said. She is way up there. This is Prabhupada's purport. This is a comparative study between Mother Yashoda and other devotees of the Lord. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arasabha Vritya, which means the only Supreme Master is Krishna, Ekala Ishwara Krishna, and all others are his servants, Arasabha Vritya. Krishna has the transcendental quality of Vritya Vashyata. We read that from the previous verse, Vritya Vashyata, that is, becoming subordinate to his Vritya, or servant. Now, although everyone is Vritya, servant, and although Krishna has the quality of becoming subordinate to his Vritya, the position of Mother Yashoda is the greatest. But Brahma is a Vritya, the servant of Krishna, and he is Adikavi, the original creator of the universe. Nevertheless, even he could not obtain such mercy as Mother Yashoda. As for Lord Shiva, he is the topmost of Vaishnavas, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. What to speak of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the constant companion, the Lord's constant companion and service, since she always associates with his body. But even she could not get such mercy. Therefore, Maharaj Prakshit was surprised, thinking, Oh, what did Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj do in their previous lives by which they got such a great opportunity, the opportunity to be the affectionate father and mother of Krishna? That's from the previous chapter. In this verse, there are three negative pronouncements, na, na, na. When anything is uttered three times, do it, do it, do it. One should understand this is meant to indicate great stress on a fact. In this verse we find, na lebire, na lebire, na lebire. Mother Yashoda is in the supermost exalted position, thus Krishna has become completely subordinate to her. And the final paragraph, the word vimuktidat is also significant. There are different types of liberation, such as, there's five kinds of liberation. You familiar? When people hear the word mukti, or liberation, generally they think of one, merging, becoming one with, entering into the effulgence of the Supreme, Brahmajyoti, mukti. That's called sayuja, becoming one with. There's four others, where they're Vaishnava liberations, where one achieves a form like the Lord, association with the Lord, abide in the same planet. Here they are. Salokya, same planet. Sarupya, a form like the Lord. Sharshti, opulences like the Lord. Samipya, association with the Lord. Those are also liberation. But vimukti means special mukti. When, after liberation, one is situated in the platform of prema bhakti, one is said to have achieved vimukti or special mukti. Therefore, the word na is mentioned three times. That exalted platform of prema, Mother Yashoda's, as described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as prema muharto mahan, and Mother Yashoda naturally acts in such an exalted position in loving affairs. She is therefore a nitya siddha devotee, an expansion of Krishna's ladini potency. Did you know that? Mother Yashoda is an expansion. She's not a jiva. She's Shakti Tattva. His potency to enjoy transcendental bliss through expansions who are special devotees. Ananda Chinmaya Rasapati Bhavitabhi. Such devotees are not sadhara siddhas. There was a question in our course of our classes. Is it possible to become a nitya siddha? Remember that question? And the answer is, nitya means nitya. And sadhara means sadhara. Siddha is perfect. One may be eternally perfect and one may become perfect. So one cannot become Mother Yashoda, but one can become a follower of Mother Yashoda or a follower of any of the nitya siddha devotees. One can become a cowherd boy. One can become a gopi. One can become an assistant of Nanda Maharaj. One can do all kinds of things. But we become the assistants of, or the servant of the servant of. Or many times we move servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of. And that's a very exalted position because it's a position of perfection. And we become perfect by following the perfect. Hearing, gradually becoming purified by hearing, slowly starting to understand things we couldn't understand before, because of that purification and the mercy received, and continue and become eternally situated. Maya sakta manak partha yogam yunjan madashraya. By having full shelter, mad ashraya, in the personality of Godhead and his devotees, starting with this regla, just like we heard, offering karmas or activities to Krishna, karma yoga. And gradually, by sadhana bhakti practices, awakening the desire to please Krishna more and more. And that purification and desire to please Krishna more and more, elevation of consciousness, diminishing of the conditioning influences, you know, the weaknesses and bad qualities and undesirable traits that we wish we could be free from. It happens. It's a natural byproduct of the bhakti process. Gradual, but it's a natural byproduct. And hearing these topics about Krishna has that purifying effect, cleansing and awakening of attraction. Okay, so happy Diwali, everybody. It's a Diwali topic. It happened all on Diwali Day. I'll tell you a nice story that you probably haven't heard before. How the name Damodar, I was speaking with your son over here, the name Damodar means tying a rope around Krishna's waist. Damo Udara. So there's a Radha Damodar pastime. This celebrated one is Yasoda Damodar. Yasoda binds Krishna. There's a description in one of the writings of Rupa Goswami taken from Bhavishya Purana where Krishna had an appointment to meet with Radha at her home. Now, he's a little boy, but he was supposed to meet with her at her home. You know the story of how Radharani became Krishna's cook? Well, that's another nice story. It involved Durvasa Muni. One time, Durvasa Muni was visiting in Vrindavan. And the gopis, very innocent girls, they saw Durvasa Muni crossing through a field and they went running before him. Oh, Durvasa Muni, how fortunate you've come to Vrindavan. Can we do some service? And he said, yes, I'm very hungry. I haven't eaten in a long time. I'd like something right now. And they looked at each other and said, well, we'll go quickly to our homes and prepare something. He said, no, you don't understand. I want something right now. And they looked at each other and Radharani took some dust from Vrindavan, mixed it with some water and offered Durvasa Muni some Brijbasi biscuits. And Durvasa Muni said, what? You expect me to eat this? And the gopi said, no, you don't understand. Radharani is very special. Whatever she prepares is really special. Try just one. So he reluctantly tried one. It was fantastic. So he then gave a benediction to Radharani that, you know, he's Ashutosh. He's the partial expansion of Lord Shiva. Whatever. He's easily pleased and easily angered, and when he's pleased, he can do something wonderful. So he said to Radharani, everything that you cook for the rest of your life will never taste the same. It'll never be a duplicate of whatever you prepared before. And anyone who eats your offering will be healthy and long-lived. So well, off Durvasa Muni went, eating his biscuits. And Radharani went back home and told her mother what happened. Kirtita, you never guess what happened today. And Kirtita informed Yashoda. Wow, they know what happened today. So Yashoda said, oh, my dear friend Kirtita, if your daughter even though she's very little, she got this benediction. If she could cook every morning for Krishna, that would be so wonderful. So from the time she was a little girl, early in the morning, before Krishna would go out with taking care of the cows or calves, she'd come to Nandagram. There was a special kitchen. She and her gopi friends would prepare Krishna's breakfast every day, even after she was married. She prepared Krishna's breakfast. So Krishna was supposed to meet with her. Back to this Radha Damodar story. But he was late, Rupa Goswami describes. It's specifically, the Sanskrit says, Radha Geha. It's her home. A Griha, Maratha Griha, Radha. So he was late. And when he came late, Radharani was angry. She looked at him with angry eyes, and she took a sash from her waist and put it around Krishna's waist. And Krishna said, oh, this is very nice. The kind of affection that you have shown for me has increased my happiness at this name, Damodar. From this day forward, anyone who calls the name Damodar will become filled with devotion. And later, in the material world, because this took place in Krishna Loka, this according to Bhavishya Purana, and later I'll perform a pastime with Mother Jasoda, she will also bind me around the waist. So there's a Radha Damodar pastime in addition to a Yasoda Damodar pastime. Krishna liked being controlled by the love of his devotees, not by ropes or by anything, but by the love of his devotees. So Radharani smiled. She forgave Krishna. Her anger stopped. So let's see if there's some discussion. Lalita? Vishaka? Radha?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So my question is, we have learned so many different moods. Like in Vrindavan, there is a different kind of a mood. And in Dwaraka, there is a different kind of a mood altogether. And various other places also, a different kind of mood of the devotees towards the Lord. Is there any example where any particular personality was in a particular mood, but later came to the stage of the Vrindavan Vasi's mood?
I don't know of any like that. The closest that I can think of is in Chaitanya Charitamrita. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya was traveling in South India. After Sri Rangam, the very next passage describes meeting Ram Bhakta. Pastime? Yeah. So by association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he shifted from Ram Bhakta to Krishna Bhakta. Just by his association, not there wasn't any preaching or arm twisting or anything, just by his association. Yeah. That's one example.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, Radha's next. You have something?
Yeah.
Okay. Wait. We have people listening online. So we want to give you the microphone. We'll give you the microphone, but you got to take your mask off just while you speak, and then you can put it back on again. Okay.
You know how Krishna made the universe, right?
Why Krishna did what?
Made the universe, right?
He did what?
Made the universe.
Krishna made the universe. He sure did.
Then how did his parents come to life?
How did plants come to life?
Parents.
Parents come to life. Well, he's the original parent. Parents come from parents. Parents are children that come from parents. just like your parents. They're children from some other parent. And Krishna is the original parent.
But before Krishna was born, where did people live if he created the universe?
Before Krishna was born, how come there are people living?
Oh, because
created the universe.
Okay, I got it. Krishna created the universe and then he entered the universe that he created. So before he entered the universe that he created the universe. And then he entered the universe that he created. Is that all right? Okay. How about you, your sister? You got something?
But shouldn't his parents be more powerful since they bought him?
I didn't get it.
Shouldn't the parents be more powerful because they got Krishna into the universe? I mean,
who's more powerful?
The parents.
The parents of Krishna?
Parents. Because they are the medium through which Krishna came.
So that means Mother Yashoda and Nanda are more powerful than Krishna because they're the parents of Krishna. That's your idea? But they didn't create the universe.
True.
But Krishna created them and then became their son. Krishna is the original father of all parents, including Yashoda and Nanda. Krishna is the original parent of all parents, including Nanda and Yashoda. And then he appeared as their son. It's a pretty good trick, huh?
And I have one more question.
Okay.
How do people know if this is actually true?
If which is actually true?
If this whole story of Krishna.
The whole story of Krishna is true. Okay, that's a nice question. How do you know anything is true? How do you know that you're standing here in your living room? You look around, your senses say, look, you know, here's the floor, there's the ceiling, there's the wall, there's Mom, there's the doorway, I'm in the living room. I can, with my senses, I'm going to give you an answer to your question. There are three ways of knowing things, according to the Vedic way of looking at things. You know through your senses. You know through your senses, you can perceive something. But our senses make mistakes. They're fallible instruments. Another is reasoning. Just like I look out the window and it's not dark yet, so I can say the sun's still up. But there could be some other explanation. Maybe there's a bunch of lights out there and it just looks like the sun's still up, but the sun went down. Or there's other examples. The second process is the mind, the reasoning faculty of the mind. Sense perception, in Sanskrit is called pratyaksha, direct sense perception. Reasoning or inferring something, like supposing I hear a big explosion. You know, something, so I hear a sound, something exploded. But maybe it was, you know, maybe it was our sound system just made some loud noise or something. Could be some other cause. By reasoning or logic, you can't necessarily know something. Then the third is a means of knowing something is through authority. I'll give a worldly example. It's the pandemic time and I don't travel much now. But otherwise I travel a lot. And supposing I want to know if the airline, if the flight is on time, I have to go to some authority. So supposing it's United Airlines. I just call United Airlines and say, is the flight on time? I don't ask the guy down the street or the gas station or, you know, a bank teller, is the flight on time? I go to the right person that knows if United Airlines is if the departure is on time or not. So that's another way of knowing something, through authority. It's called Shabda Pramana. Pramana means evidence, and Shabda means sound. So you can hear through authority. So we know through authority. We know through authority. Now, how do I know the authority is right? That's, you know, I'm responding to your question. I'm trying to respond to your question. Three ways of knowing: senses, reason and logic, authority. And the authority behind the Vedas for centuries and centuries and centuries and centuries has been accepted by learned personalities. So that doesn't prove it's correct, but it's like strong likelihood that it's correct. So the Vedic, wait, let me just finish. The Vedic authority says such and such. Now, I'm not sure. Supposing, you know, I'm you and I want to know, how do I know? And here's how you know. You do the experiment. You can experiment with the bhakti process and find out if it's true. You can find out. You can find out if it's true. If there is a source of everything, and there's a science to how you can find out. Just like you probably know this from school. Water is made up of two things, hydrogen and oxygen, right? They call it H2O. So over here is some hydrogen, over here is some oxygen. And I'm telling, you know, somebody tells you, your science teacher tells you, you combine this and that and you get water. You go, how do I know? So you put this together with that and there's water. Similarly, how do we know this Vedic teaching is true? One is the great authorities from all time, they accept it's true. But I can also make my own little experiment. I follow the process and I get some realization. The example that's given is, have you ever fasted? Can you think of any time where you fasted for some, like a half a day or something? Something? Okay, well, just supposing you're not fasting. Supposing you're really hungry. You say, Mom, I'm really hungry. And she said, okay, hang on. We'll get your dinner together. It's almost ready. And she feeds you your dinner. It's there for you. And you eat and you eat. And at a certain point in time, she says, you want any more of the vegetable? You want any more of the bread? You want any more of this and that? And you say, no, I'm full. How do you know you're full? Because you feel full. I'm using that example to say you can experience by realization, is this whole story true? There's a science, just like the eating process is how you satisfy hunger. So by the devotional process is how you can understand truth that's beyond the senses and beyond the mind. That's the way to know those things. But you elevate your consciousness to that stage and you can touch it with consciousness, not with your mind and senses. You can experience it for yourself. Like eating, you feel full. Someone doesn't have to tell you. Repeat after me. You had enough. You'll be able to say, no, I've had enough. From your direct experience. Like that, spiritual truth can be experienced. You want to try? Well, let me think about it. But that's how you can know. And otherwise, you'll just be, you know, I'm not sure if it's true or not. I don't really know. Okay. More? Do you want to say something further on this? I wanted to continue. You tried to interrupt me.
I have a comment.
Comment. Let's hear it.
What if this is all a lie? It's just someone who's trying to make people think that, oh, this is a thing that.
Repeat.
What if this, all these things are just a lie? Like somebody is trying to
pick up. It's possible. It's a possibility to consider. It's a possibility. What if? Well, you know, maybe that's an option that you want to look at. But what if it's true? And how are you going to know if it's a lie or if it's true?
Some people believe by seeing it, it's true.
Some people believe that it's by seeing.
Okay. Okay. But my sense, so I look in the sky and I see the sun. It looks like a little disc. It's not a little disc. But my senses are imperfect. I look into a desert, it looks like there's water. But in a desert, there's no water, it's a mirage. My senses are imperfect, etc. There's many examples to illustrate. That which we know by seeing is imperfect because the instrument is imperfect. So seeing is believing is imperfect. It's something, it's not a zero, but it's not a 10. So how do I know? Seeing is imperfect. Seeing is believing, but it's an imperfect believing. Because there are some things, let me ask you, is there such a thing as an electron? There's electronics. It's a whole field of electronics. I mean, you know, we got electronic things going on all over the place. It's being powered by an electron. Has anyone seen an electron? No. So how do you know it exists? Because you haven't seen it. You understand that it exists because of the effect of the electron or the electronics. You understand a thing by its symptoms. Although you may not be able to see it. So there's observable symptoms of the presence of the soul. And when the soul is gone, everything, matter, breaks down into element, disintegrates. The integrating force is something unseen. How do you know? Because you haven't seen it. Maybe it's something else. So then you go to your senses and your reasoning and authority. From the Vedas, there's authority. So you can say, well, I don't know if I accept that authority. Okay, then you'll continue to not know because your senses and mind will never know. It's never conclusive. So you can stay in that zone of, I don't know. But you'll never know. There's a way to know. There's knowledge, and you act on knowledge, you get realization. If it's knowledge, you act on knowledge, something will happen. If it's actually knowledge, just like by the eating process, you'll feel full. You can experience it. Over there, there's an electric outlet. If I stick my fingers in the electric outlet, I'll feel something. A shock. I may not have seen an electron, but I'll feel something. So similarly, you can experiment. You can just stay in the position, well, I don't know.
Or the people do not want to stick their hand in them. Only little kids want.
Huh?
Only little kids may like to put their hands into the socket, but not everyone like to put their hands.
Of course not. I'm just giving an example of you can find out, is there something on the other side of that plug or not? Maybe the circuit breaker is popped and you're not going to experience electricity. I just said an example. It's to say you can directly experience whether this is true or not. How do we know? I'm just using this as an example of direct experience. You can directly experience it. You don't have to, but it's accessible. It's an option for you to consider. As it's an option to consider, maybe it's just made up. Maybe it's just somebody, a bunch of people got together and made up a far-out story, and it's just a far-out story. Maybe there's nothing more to it than that. Maybe. And then maybe it's true. And how do you know? It's because that's what we're talking about. There's a way to verify. Okay, we're back to Radha.
I have two questions and a comment. I'm going to do the comment first. This is a comment on her question about the stories, if it exists. And I just want to say there's a way to prove that, for example, Nandigram, you said that you went over there. And if you went over there, then you're seeing the place, which is true. And that's how you know that the story is true again.
Well, I can't. It doesn't prove that the story is true. I went there, I experienced a place, but I don't know what really took place in a previous yuga. I accept the authority of Valmiki Ramayana. So, but that's how I know it's true. You know, but supposing somebody says, "Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just like Harry Potter. Maybe it's just fiction."
And my other two questions is first about the point that you made about people taking advantage of you being...
You're familiar with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how to still be in the bhakti mood but not let anyone take advantage of you?
Well, they may try to take advantage of you and they may think that they have taken advantage of you. But if you're sheltered, you heard the discussion last night, if you hold steadfast to who you are, your values, like, you know, the core of your very being, they can't hurt you. They can't take advantage of you. They may think, aha, I laughed at her and so I took advantage of her or something. I pulled her ponytail and so took advantage of her. And she didn't fight back, so there, I took advantage of her. But, you know, you're not feeling, if you're situated in self-identity, they're just, you know, they're being silly and they can think in their silliness they've taken advantage of you. Okay.
Second question is about the point about sons. I think affection for sons, and why isn't it not like that for daughters?
Not for daughters?
The similar affection for daughters.
Oh, it's just because he's speaking about boys. It's not like the daughters, there's not affection for daughters. Because Krishna was their son, not Krishna was their daughter. If Krishna was their daughter, they would have spoken about daughters. Radha was the daughter. They had this affection for Radha. Yeah. Okay. Anything? Any our host or hostess? You have something? No? Okay. You have anything? Anything online?
No.
You have something? If not, I think we're done. Okay. Looks like, because otherwise we're dominated by children.
You have something?
No, she's just celebrating, dominated by children. Yay.
I've been hearing you about Britya Vashyata, that Krishna is... Krishna is... Actually, Britya Vashyata, like Prabhupada, in his statement he has said that Krishna is controlled by his devotees, but you had been explaining it further that actually Krishna is not controlled.
I'm just reading what our acharyas say.
Okay, by the love of his devotees.
Yes, yes.
I'm just trying to see, like, if you take the literal version of the phrase, Vritya Varshata,
yes, it is.
It sounds like that Krishna is controlled by his devotees.
That's what it says. He's controlled by his devotees. But what makes the devotee a devotee? It's their bhakti. And therefore, the further elaboration. If that both statements are correct, the more elaborate one is more precise.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to understand this statement which came during your reading that Krishna is not controlled by his devotees, but Krishna is controlled by love of his devotees.
I read it three times.
And that's the reason I was trying to emphasize on.
Yeah. Yes, correct.
Maharaj, when there are devotees who come to this world to reclaim fallen souls, is it known that there are Nitya Siddhas who could come, or any devotee that Krishna sends come to the earth?
Both. Not one or the other, both.
So it's not that the role of Nitya Siddha devotees is always only in engaging in pastimes of Krishna, but they also take the role of Madhyama Adhikari too.
They may do whatever Krishna wants them to do. That's what they do.
Okay. Thank you.
In the back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, is it said in the Shastras if there are any more Nitya Siddha devotees coming?
If there's any what?
Any more Nitya Siddha devotees coming?
I'll send a text message to Krishna Loka to find out. If I get a reply, I'll let you know. I'll forward you the message. From time to time, it's always going on. But Krishna is merciful. Mercy doesn't have limit. But, you know, how and when, and that's up to him. Radha, once more.
This is related to her question about Subhadra's question about Nitya Siddhas coming to earth. If Nitya Siddhas are coming to heaven, so Nitya Siddhas are coming to hell, why can't they come on earth?
They can.
Well, then why aren't they coming?
Well, why do you say they're not coming? Maybe Prabhupada was one of those. Bhaktisiddhanta for sure was one of those. I say maybe because there are devotees. There's two camps. Some say Prabhupada showed by example as if he was ordinary and then became extraordinary. Or there's another camp that said he is eternally perfect. He didn't become anything. He was exhibiting a pastime, although he is an Ichasitta. So there's two camps. But Bhaktisiddhanta specifically because his father prayed for a ray of Vishnu and he was a, you know, Vaikunthavasi living in this world. And it wasn't so long ago.
But right now I don't think of any Nitya Siddhas.
Well, who are you? When Bhaktisiddhanta was a small boy, who even knew about him? So maybe there's some small boys. I mean, and besides, what does it matter? Whether one is a sadhana siddha or a nitya siddha. You know, you should worry about becoming perfect rather than what's the inventory of nitya siddhas on the planet today? That's what you should worry about.
Okay, thank you.
Touche. Okay. So we're done for the day. We have two more classes this evening on Diwali. Diwali's been a very exercising day so far, and more to come. Srila Prabhupada ki.